Hey, it's Wyman and Bob here on 710 ESPN Seattle. We got the Mariners pregame show coming up at the bottom of the hour as they get set to take on the Angels. So stay tuned for that. Let's see if they can get back in the win column. But what this outfield situation that we talked about, and again, people tuning in at different times all day, so I'm going to play this cut one more time for those of you that missed it. Jerry DePoto was asked if he expected Kyle Lewis to be out, you know, for a substantial amount of time. Here's what he had to say.
I would imagine so. You know, much like we experienced coming out of spring training, anything that we do with Kyle, we're going to make sure that we're hypersensitive to the needs. And we want him to have a long career here in Seattle and to thrive. And my guess is that is going to result this time in a bit of a prolonged absence. I am hopeful that we'll see him again this year on the field, but I don't think it's going to be quick. So we're going to take our time, identify how we can help. And, you know, and Kyle needs to make some decisions on what he wants to do. But again, I don't think this is going to be days and weeks. I think it's going to be longer than that.
All right. So none of that is good. None of that is, he's hopeful they'll see him again this year.
Yeah. And my guess is that the result is going to be a prolonged absence. So there was just a lot there, you know, like he said, I'd imagine so, as far as it being a longer time out. And then he said, we're also hypersensitive to his needs. You know, and look, Kyle Lewis is a great kid, and we've interviewed him before, just a great dude. And I'm not trying to make it sound like maybe he's being difficult, but he is being very thorough, as mm-hmm. he should be. And, you know, getting a second opinion, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And that was something that actually came about, I want to say, you know, right before I got in the league, you know, you kind of had to go to the team doctor. And so, and, you know, there was a doctor at one point where...
Wait, back, meaning if something happened, you couldn't go to your guy. They just said, this is who you're going to see, and he'll come up with the diagnosis.
Yeah. And I suppose if somebody pushed it, you know, to a point where it's like, hey, I'm going somewhere else, you know, maybe they would have let him go, but it was just kind of, that's the way it was done. You know, it was mm-hmm. just like, go to the team doctor. He's a you know, team doctor for an NFL team, so of course he's good. So, you know, maybe that's something that's going on, but, you know, him saying we want to be hypersensitive to his needs, and then he sounded very disappointed to me.
Yeah, it's not good. None of that. There's nothing in that soundbite that was good or makes you feel optimistic about anything attached to Kyle Lewis now.
And I think that's like the third time we've heard it.
Yeah.
I'll probably feel worse if we play it again.
Okay. So well, we won't do that.
Let's not.
So with that, he's going to be out for a substantial amount of time, maybe the rest of the season. Maybe he makes his way back at some point. But for the foreseeable future, he's out of the mix. So now you've got Mitch Haniger. We've been raving about him. You love him. Don't trade him. You need him. And you've got Taylor Trammell. You've got Kelnick. Mm-hmm. And you've got Jake Fraley. So those are your options right now. And Kelnick is interesting because he's struggling so badly. And we had a texter earlier saying, you guys are crazy. There's no way they'd send him down. They don't have anybody else that could come up and produce. I'm thinking they could find anybody they want. They could pull the utility guy that they had pitched the other night. Mayfield, throw him in the outfield.
Yeah.
He could hit 111. You know, why ruin a prospect? Why potentially set him back if he's a core piece of your future? If he's projected to be a superstar, why would you potentially do damage to his psyche that may take him a long time to get over? I mean, you just don't know how everybody's built differently. We've had these cautionary tales before with Ackley and with Zunino, and, you know, what did that do to them and their failures, and they brought him up too soon and all of that stuff. So the idea that they're just going to keep him here just because they don't have another body, no, that's not going to happen. They'll go out and get somebody off the street. They'll use one of their utility guys. They want to put Walton out there. I don't know how long until our
Dylan Moore
is back. They throw him out there. I mean, they're going to find somebody if he is going to continue on this trend. Now, Jerry was asked about Kelnick and his approach, and in Jerry's opinion, he's handling things the right way.
You know, and anything's possible as it's necessary, but I will say this about JK. He's not going to bat at 120 for the year. I'd say he's much better than that on a skill level. And, you know, it's unfortunate. I think prior to this homestand, especially the series with the A's, Jared's at bats have been really good. And he's hitting the ball hard and he's doing all the right things. And if you would have told me that, you know, 2.5 weeks into his major league career, he was going to have a 9% walk rate and a 25% strikeout rate, I'd say sign me up. This is going to go really well.
All right, so he's not nearly as bothered by what he's seen to this point, talking about his BABIP, is the balls he's putting into play. It's more bad luck is how he sees it. Also talked about his frustration and talking about patience being the virtue here.
You could see the frustration starting to build up, especially with this last series with the A's. And it's frustrating for a player who is used to, I mean, he's not used to getting a hit a night. Mm-hmm. He's used to getting multiples. And, you know, for him to go out and go through a stretch like this where he's now, you know, it's a dry spell north of 20 plate appearances. I was proud of him in the first game of the Oakland series for going up there and taking his walks. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's it's the key. That's how you get out of these things is you see pitches.
And we'll see how he handles it moving forward. You know, maybe getting out on the road will help him a bit. It's just a different environment. I mean, who knows? Who knows? He hasn't been exposed to much at this point. So you don't know what the right button is to push with him yet. And he doesn't know. Otherwise, he would have pushed it. They would have figured this out. So I think it's everybody's learning together, but I don't see this dragging on much past another week or so at best. If he continues like this, where it is not getting better, he's getting more frustrated. The idea that they would keep him up with the big club just because we don't have another body that could fill his role, that's absolutely a non-starter. They will find somebody to plop out there.
Yeah. Do you remember him the last time he took the day off? Wasn't that on a Sunday against the Padres? Because it shows that he has a plate appearance. I swear.
He came up as a pinch hitter.
Yeah, he came in as a pinch hitter. But he basically had the day off.
Yeah.
The next day, he ended up going two for four. And then, one for four, and then he went two for five the next night. So maybe this is something to watch tonight is, you know, he just got a night off, and, you know, maybe that will be the difference for him. And then that combination with dropping down to the six hole, maybe that makes a difference. But, yeah, everybody's different. That's the thing about it. And, you know, you look at, like, Taylor Trammell, and I don't think you can judge based on, you know, it's just what they are. Taylor Trammell is this tremendously nice guy. You know, he just that's the way he is. He doesn't really have that. You haven't seen him slam his helmet down or, you know, yell out expletives. It's different than what Kelnick, the process he goes through.
A little less animated.
Yeah, just a little bit. But that's fine. I mean, I've been perfectly fine. I know people have texted in, you know, that, oh, he's pouting, this and that. I've not had any problems with Jared Kelnick and his reaction. The guy has never failed like this before ever in his life, I guarantee you. I mean, I haven't, maybe Little League, but there's no way that, you know, this meteoric rise that he's had, there's no way that he has had this kind of failure ever. So,
well, and we also know that if he were to show no emotion, if he were stoic and just walk back to the dugout, people would text him and go, the guy doesn't care. He doesn't care.
Oh, you're exactly right.
He's not. We want somebody with passion. He doesn't, look at him. He doesn't care. So he's not going to win. What should he do? No. What should the proper reaction be?
Right.
Should he show frustration? Should he skip back to the dugout with a big smile on his face? Hey, it's going to be okay, guys. I'm fine. I mean, I don't know what the right – I think the natural reaction is the one you go with, and that's his natural reaction. He is a very passionate player. Jerry said it there. The frustration is building, and you can see that. It's very clear. The worry is that it digs him deeper into the hole, that he tries too hard, that he's up there and he's gripping that bat extra tight, and I'm going to swing extra hard, or I'm going to – you know, you're going to overcompensate. I don't think baseball's not a sport where you can try harder and get better results. The harder I try, the better I'm going to be at the plate. I don't think that's how that works.
No, it does not. It's kind of like golf. You know, you hit a bad shot.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, I remember an instructor one time was like, see how your fingers are white and there's no blood there? You need to not choke the club to death.
Is that what you were doing?
Yeah. But, I mean, look, that's, you're right. Football, I mean, you can go out there and take your aggression out by just coming up and hitting somebody, you know, that. Yeah.
You got a much bigger target with a human being as opposed to that little ball coming at you at 95 miles an hour.
It's curving and whatnot. Yeah, although, I would make the argument that Barry Sanders was very close.
he was very much like a 90, giant breaking ball.
Yeah, or a 90-mile-an-hour slider. But, yeah, it's just different for everybody. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned that about people, as far as their reaction goes. And one example for, I was coaching at Redmond High School. I was the defensive coordinator, and we played Eastlake, and Eastlake was really good, and they scored like 49 points on us or something like that. So one of my neighbors at the time was like, yeah, I saw you down on the sidelines. I didn't see any emotion or anything like that. You know, I would have been screaming and yelling and throwing things. And I was like, do you think that would be a good example for my kids to see that? Like, everybody reacts differently, and you know, so you can't judge people on that. You've heard that every once in a while about, you know, guys on the sidelines and their demeanor, and why isn't he more angry?
Yeah.
Like, well, I mean, is that going to do any good? You know, a lot of times it didn't. Would it have done any good for me to panic and scream and yell at my kids when they got scored on? No, that wouldn't help.
Would have
situation.
Just scared them, put them into a deeper shell. Yeah. You know, just they'd be more tense.
Right.
Creates more tension.
Well, and so for Kelnick, that's his reaction. I happen to like it. I like when he, you know, Dave Sims had to apologize for the language at one point. And then there was, you know, slamming the helmet down, slamming the bat down. You know, I think we can all relate to that. We can all relate to that kind of frustration. So, but, you know, I would just say this to the kid. Don't hurt yourself.
Yeah.
Just don't hurt yourself.
Don't punch a wall.
Don't punch a wall.
Don't do any, don't do any of that stuff. And you guys can text in 710-710 to the Mac and Jacks text line. 206 saying they'll probably give him as many games as they gave Taylor before he was sent down in early May. I don't know that they've got a number on anybody. I don't think there's a set number for every young guy. Like, all right, we give them 27 games, and after that, I think it just depends on their personality and how they see them reacting to what's going on out there. Is it getting worse? Is it getting counter? Is it becoming counterproductive? Is there a gain? Is there a win to any of this? Hey, they're learning. They're taking strides. He's on the fastball. He's really starting. His timing is starting to come. He's had some unlucky moments, but you know, are there any areas of positivity that they're seeing versus when Trammell was sent down, he looked lost. I mean, he looked like he was just up there flailing. He had no idea what was coming, and he was just swinging away and, you know, striking out every other at-bat is untenable. I mean, he had 83 at-bats, 41 strikeouts. So it was not getting better. It was just getting worse. It was compounding for him. So they knew the moment to pull the trigger there. And that will be the same approach to Kelnick, whether it's more games than Trammell had, less games. It's about where is he at, how is he reacting, and is this becoming problematic for him? It's not about the season. It's not about, as much as Mariner fans hate hearing that, it's not about, wow, we're losing games. We're not going to make the playoffs now because he's struggling. That's not what this year has been about, and they prepared everybody before the year for that. It's about what is he gaining from this situation? Is he getting better? Is there something he can take away from this, or is he better served to go down to AAA, gain some confidence, develop his timing, work on whatever mechanical issues they may see in his swing or what his approach. That's what that's about. It's not about, well, if he keeps hitting like this, we're not going to win. That's unfortunately, and again, I acknowledge you hate to hear it, but it's secondary this year.
Yeah, well, and by way of comparison, this is Kelnick's 21st game up, and if you want to count the one at bat that he took a pinch hit, you know, it's 20 games that he's played, but basically it's 19. It's 19 games that he played. I don't remember if Trammell took days off during his first stint up, but there was 27 games that he played in before he got sent down. So, I mean, if you want to just compare it directly to Trammell, and every player is different, there's, you know, what, 8 more games to go for Jared Kelnick at this pace. You know, I mean, like if he starts to light it up a little bit, maybe longer, but it's not like – you know, it just, you have to be patient. You know, and it's hard not to do this. You live and die by every game. I was telling you, Bob, during the break, I'm like, I'm all excited last night up there with my notepad. I write down June 2nd versus A's, who the pitchers are, whole thing, ready to start taking notes, watching the game. And then I just fast forwarded after inning 5.
There wasn't much to see other than Manaea just owning them. I mean, There was not a lot to sit there and speculate about or celebrate. I mean, Flexen got off to a fantastic start. You know, ground ball out after ground ball out, pitch count, super efficient, and then came the Elvis Andrus at-bat, which was 13 pitches, and, things changed. But, you know, just back to the outfield and Kelnick, the idea that he's going to be here because they don't have other bodies, that's a non-starter. That's not going to be true at all. And I asked a question on our show email last night that maybe you could speak to, and that is, Is there going to be a silver lining to all these injuries that with the guys that are currently here and keeping they're afloat? I mean, they're a game below 500, but they're not the worst team in baseball. They're not 10 games below 500 and the season's already over. They're still a respectable team out there. And if they're able to continue that, does that speed up the chemistry? Does that help, you know, hey, our backs are against the – you use every cliche. Our backs are against the wall. It's us against the world. We've got everybody hurt, but somehow we're still staying afloat. We're still representative. It feels like that could be a really galvanizing thing for a locker room or a clubhouse.
Yeah, totally. Or even, you know, in our case, it was a position group. In 1990, I started off the year on the IR and missed 8 games. And the starting linebackers for 8 games straight were Terry Wooden, Darren Como, and Rufus Porter. And they mm-hmm. started 8 games. Then I came back because Como got hurt. He moved over. And then I went to the middle. And then I want to say Rufus got hurt like 3 weeks later. And then we had Joe Kane in there. Long story short, the 8 games that I played in, we had 5 different configurations of linebackers, including me and a defensive back at one point. They put Robert Blackman up in the box, you know. So
I remember him, number 25.
Number 25.
Yeah.
He was crazy.
Was he?
I saw him in a fight one time take his pull the helmet off of a dude and try to smash it into his head.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was a fight out of practice. I was like, okay, I'm not going to mess with
that. Was
with
a fight
Robert
with one
Blackman.
Of his teammates. I thought you were talking about an opponent.
No.
Oh,
no.
Boy. Okay.
I think he might have been arrested if that had been the case. Anyway, yeah, Robert Blackman was a tough dude, man. But, you know, we bonded. We used to have these linebacker meetings, or we called it a meeting. We would go out on, you know, Monday night and have these little parties. We'd go to different establishments, you know, get together, everything. I'll never forget, there was a guy named Dave Ahrens that started. He was this old linebacker who had like a mustache, and he was balding, mm-hmm. and he smoked cigarettes. And he was one of the starters at one point. And we were such a tight group because of that, because it was like we were all just dropping like flies. I mean, I missed the first 8. You know, Rufus Porter got hurt. Joe Kane went down. I mean, everybody did, but we stuck together as a group. And I don't know, it just made it. It made it more fun. It was kind of like this misery that we had, but it's like at least we have, you know, a good bit of chemistry.
Yeah, so, shared misery.
Yeah,
I mean, you're
exactly.
in this boat together, and you guys can sink or swim together.
Right.
You know, again, we're trying to find silver linings to what is a really unfortunate and ugly situation for this team as it pertains to injuries. I mean, it's been uncanny. It's been ridiculous the level of injury they've suffered this early in the season. You still have over 100 games to play.
I know. It's so ridiculous. And I feel sorry for Jerry. And again, we've talked a little bit, at least I posed the question, do you start to push back, you know, when you expect results because of this? I mean, do you think that like halfway through next year, if they're still not getting it done, are people going to be saying, yeah, you know, well, I mean, they're sub 500, but those injuries, you know, hurt them if they don't have Kyle Lewis. Yeah. The rest of the year?
That makes sense on the surface. That's the rational, reasonable approach.
But
it's
we're
not
going to
fly.
We're talking about our Mariner fans.
You're talking about Mariner fans who are just done with excuses.
Right.
And as much as that's a legitimate, valid excuse, it's not going to fly. I'm telling you, it will not fly. If he comes out or the management comes, you know, owners, Stanton, whoever, service, comes out and says, hey, we were looking to compete in 22, but based on the injuries we sustained last season and everything that went on, it really impacted our development. So we're really hoping for 23 now. There are going to be people railing against this team unlike anything we've seen. It just won't fly. I'm telling you. There'll be the few in there that go, I get it. I'm not happy about it, but I get it. And the rest will be, I don't care. I've been hearing about this for years. It's been over 2 decades since we've seen the postseason. I don't care. Fix it. That's going to be that simple. Fix it. Bring somebody in. What, Kyle Lewis is not healthy? He's not developed? Sign somebody. Spend some money. That's going to be the attitude.
Yeah. There's some fans at the ballpark that, you know, while they've been alive, the Mariners have not been.
No.
So, yeah.
They've never known a Mariner playoff team.
No, they have not known that.
They keep hearing about 95.
Yeah. Remember the guy sitting next to the kid? He's like, yeah, my dad keeps talking about 95, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, Dad, I wasn't even born yet.
It is a drought unlike any other. I totally relate to the frustration. I get the cynicism. And what you said is a reasonable excuse, but I think people are just done. As much as it makes sense, I think people will be just done. Then fix it. That's all it's going to be. Spend the money, whatever it takes to put this team in a position to compete for a postseason spot. That's what you better do, because people are just ready to tap out.
Oh, and also, don't trade Mitch Haniger.
Yeah, there's that too. That's a bad idea for a team that you want to be competitive next year, unless you pull off a trade that nobody expects and you get it done with players that can help you now. Trading him doesn't help you compete immediately, and that's what they need to do. All right, that does it for us. I want to thank our guests today, Paul Moyer, Jeff Baker, and John Clayton, for joining us on the program. If you missed any of today's show, or any day for that matter, head to 710sports.com, click the podcast tab, scroll down to our picture and click on that. Anything you missed each and every day will be waiting for you right there. You got Mariners pregame show coming up next. We're going to be back with you tomorrow right here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.